You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
How are you?
And it's me, Brian. And on this episode, we are covering the anime that aired the week of the 13th of June 2021 to the 19th of June 2021. And we will start this week, as we often do, with Moriarty the Patriot. This time is episode 22, The Two Criminals.
Oh, I thought they were meant to be the two detectives. My gosh.
They flipped it. Well, rather, Sherlock is the one who does the most of the flipping on everybody. So, yes, we learn what Mary's being blackmailed for, which in the end turns out to be entirely inconsequential.
It's consequential to her, but she was She was the bait for a bigger trap.
Yes, it was bait to get Sherlock to come to Milverton's house, so that Sherlock would be there when Moriarty comes to his house to kill him, and then Sherlock, he'll be forced to arrest Moriarty in order to cover up the scandal that Mary's got in her past. But Milverton has...
It's fun that time makes fools of us all, because I feel like nowadays, if you were involved in student riots in France, it would be a mark of pride.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah, get the men.
She's too bought into this Victorian social climbing things you've got going on.
To be fair, Watson's like, oh, I'll still marry you. Like, I don't give a damn. I still love you. Yes. But Sherlock's kind of like, yeah, but if you're extradited to France, that's going to be a little more difficult.
And I don't want that for John. Mm-mm. I want to see his other hand get broken again. Not by you, especially.
And they get to the house, and Sherlock's and Watson hear a load of fighting already happening within the house. Like gunfire and blades clashing. It's a whole lot of stuff going on. So
it's all the Moriarty boys just fucking having this, like, running battles with the entirety of the mansion that we're not privy to a lot of, maybe in the comic. Let's hope so.
Yes. Yeah, I feel like that's probably where a lot of the cuts have happened.
Yeah, we're missing out on some good action scenes.
So
you get, like, knife guy versus knife guy. You get gun guy versus gun guy. You get other knife guy versus giant hulking monster with a metal face. Okay, not even everywhere. But
yeah, I was like, no sign of James Bond either, so...
Off on a mission, obviously.
Oh, yeah, probably got to tap Moonraker or something this week.
So Sherlock sends Watson off to go and fetch the police. We can use the police to cover up whatever we're planning on doing. And Watson's like, okay, but you don't go in there. You stay here, wait for me. And
sure, buddy.
It felt very much like John telling Garfield not to eat the lasagna.
And the Watson's gone, the party may begin.
So he immediately hops in and pulls a gun on Milverton, who's already got a gun pulled on him from Moriarty.
I like this line. I was like, it's a good thing you arrived when you did, because I would have been shot otherwise. Now I can enact my evil plan. Yeah.
But does not realise that Holmes can tell when he's bluffing. Because he grinds, whenever his true nature comes forth, he grinds his back teeth together.
You got an obvious tell.
Yes. So he knows that. Well, and also he gives away that the Mary's story would not be worth anything in the newspapers.
So that you haven't set that one up to be posthumously published in case of your death. But if I shoot you and then I get shot, then that's fine, because then you, like, that still reveals the Lord of Crime, which you brought to me here. So, you know, that still works out.
Yeah, and Liam, you're perfectly fine with being revealed, aren't you? Oh yeah, I'm perfectly fine. So then they both end up pointing their guns at him again, after they've been pointing their guns at each other for a bit.
It's very good, yeah.
You want to shoot him overnight? No, please, after you. No, after you. We'll both shoot him. Okay, yeah, that's probably the most even way to do this.
I did like the kind of like the different, the Western shots of the eyes and stuff, and him just kind of looking towards the window. I was like, I'm going to jump out onto into the sea. Where does he live in? He lives by the coast. I can't remember.
Brighton.
He's going to jump into the sea there.
He's very much built his house far too close to the cliff, because the cliff has given out underneath part of the house already.
Like, yeah, like, what are you thinking, man? That's going to cause an erosion. They knew about that back in the Victorian era. I think it's going to be like into the sea in less than a decade.
Maybe he has it as part of an insurance scam and some other plans within plans. Oh, yeah.
He's so rich he could afford to throw houses off cliffs. Yeah, so he goes to Leggett. His only chance to survive is to leap off the balcony, but he does not get there in time because Holmes just guns him down repeatedly. And then turns to Moriarty. Oh, you didn't think I was going to do that, did you?
Well, yeah.
You think you're so clever. You got everything planned out. Well, I unloaded my entire fucking gun into that guy. So, buttons. How about that?
Yeah. It's like, you think you're going to get away with everything, but I'm going to stop you. But it's going to be on my own terms, not on this guy's terms.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess next week we're heading rapidly towards a waterfall.
Yeah. The cops do arrive. Watson's very annoyed. The entire Holmes, while saying that to Moriarty, lighted a cigarette and set the entire mansion on fire. But he's turning himself into police. He's like, yeah, I killed your man who owned the mansion there, so take me in. And police are like, well, we don't have any evidence for that, but I guess we should take him in. Okay.
Why does this sort of be pathetic end for Milbert? And you think, I'm like a criminal mastermind. And say, nah,
you're not the main character.
You're out of here. Like, you're done. Even this guy who was only introduced officially in the next story act I'm going to go into, I said, you know, it's been all about him. But, so it'd be interesting going into that final story that he's famous for being introduced in and saying, well, when all this built up behind us, well, what will it change? What will it feel like?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because I quite like the ending of this from the original novels, where they go to confront him, but Milverton ends up getting murdered by one of his maids in the meantime. There's descriptions of people who are hiding in the garden, and they're like, "Why, it might be a description of Watson." And then Holmes refuses to investigate Milverton's murder with, "My sympathies are with the criminals, and I will not handle the case."
Yeah.
Because I thought that was where it was going to go. I thought Moriarty was going to shoot him, and then he'd still get to deliver that line.
Yeah.
I was looking as well about the real dude that was based upon, Charles Augustus Howell, and he was found dead with his throat cut and like a koi in his mouth, and cause of death still put down as tuberculosis. It's like, what the fuck?
Ah, that's what gets you in the end. Not the knifing or the fish stuff down your throat.
Well, it was something like that. Oh, it might have been kind of throat cut post mortem, but like someone still arranged a body there and did all that. Oh, natural causes. Who was here? Severe allergy to knives.
Does that mean we're not going to see that Chrome Dome guy anymore? Because what's his deal? Probably just, I'm a big monster.
Well, they said they're mercenaries, so potentially they could be hired by another criminal at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But that's maybe true. They all get killed in the comic, who knows? it was a lot of fun. It did give us like Sherlock finally like getting one over on Liam again. I love it when he calls him Liam. He's like the only person who calls him Liam in the entire show.
Yeah. It's his pet nickname for. Yes. I did like his reaction as well, when it's just like, oh, brilliant. I'm glad it was you. Like, because if it was anyone else, I'd be disappointed and that kind of thing.
Yes. Mm. It's like, I was wishing it was you. It could only be you. Because it'd be like, I'd have been a terrible mistake if it was somebody else.
Yeah, yeah.
Then we've got Dragon Goes House Hunting, episode 11, A Home for a Kingdom, in which Letty has to pay his taxes.
Becoming an adult sucks.
Oh, man. Home Although this tax.
Like, the amount of things he didn't have to pay tax on reminded me of being a millennial and I'm never going to own property. It was kind of like, no, you don't have to pay a housing tax. You're fine.
You're eligible for child benefits here because then obviously you're trying to raise, you know, your two children. They're my two children. Said a little redhead kid. No, she's not with me. Please.
She thinks it's funny, but then she's terribly insulted when he's like, wow, she's really good at taking human form.
Yeah.
I'm actually a human. It's like, well, that complicates things. So adoption then. Okay, gotcha.
Are you saving her for later? No, I'm not going to eat her.
And this is all by a super buff djinn who's showed up, who's like, he's not a tax collector. He's a...
He just works. He's, yes. I guess in the tax office, basically. Yeah. Talking through things, help her get it all down to one easy monthly payment.
Well, I mean, like, he was sound out. He went back and got the child benefit forms without even being prompted to. He seems all right.
Is he a bit like, you know...
He is threatening, if you're not going to pay your taxes, I'm going to kick the shit out of you right here and now. But other than that, he seems cool.
Is he a bit like when you're trying to get using a word processor, and he's like, here's a little helpful genie in the corner, I'll tell you how to make a bullet point list. It's like, thanks, genie, you can go away now. Don't need it. Thanks.
We also learn in this that the stat cards we see in the eye catches are ID cards in the real world.
Mm. That's amazing. I love it.
And Letty is greatly embarrassed by his.
Coming to a grab bag near you soon.
Yeah, that'd be a good one to do. I did like as well where he's explaining tax collection and the purposes of it, because obviously the princess understands this way better than a dragon, but... him going like, oh yeah, it's because of the Dark Lord, and then we pay it back to the community and everything like that. And it's like, the Dark Lord's right over there. And he's like, just ignore me. Just pretend I'm not here. That was great.
Yeah, the fact that he's like visually pouring, putting a fire out in the background is like, yeah.
Just busy work. Yeah.
Dampening the flames of the IRS guy at the same time.
Good stuff.
And then in this first half, they have Pip pick out a new house to look at, which turns out to be in the capital city, under the royal palace, because it is a dungeon where civil servant monsters work to train heroes.
To work for the monarchy, because the monarchy is going to be hiring heroes to do this, so technically that makes you a civil servant, I suppose. Yes. So this is actually a good job, because you get the job and you get the board along with it, so this could be a pretty sweet deal.
To be a monster living in the capital, and heroes train with you, but are not technically allowed to kill you. So, you know, win-win.
It's very offensive, though. This is just like a dungeon that humans think that monsters want to live in. I think they've not done any reading. This is like very poorly informed. Very insulting, honestly.
The amount of good jokes, like where she's mad to go on a dungeon crawl, and it's like, oh, we're going down off the main paths first. And like, why would we bother going off the main paths? It's like, that's where the treasure is. It's like, why would you just leave your treasure in a corridor that leads to nowhere? That's stupid.
What about instead of mimic? Just put our stuff in drawers like a normal person would. What is wrong with you?
I do love the catalogue of mimics who you can hire when heroes have been robbing your shit.
Yes.
So you can just have a mimic live in your house and you pay the mimic either or feed it or home it at the very least. And the mimic is just like, fucking great. Good work for me. So if anyone breaks into your house to rob your treasure chest, your big treasure chest down the end of your corridor, it'll eat them. Fantastic.
Your mimic singles are waiting in your area.
And then it briefly goes into like a wizardry parody as they switch to first person dungeoneering.
Yes. Yeah. The random monster that appears is fucking wonderful as well.
Oh my god. She's coming back from the toilet and brushing his teeth.
And then they go up, they come to a dead end, but there's some steps up, which takes them to a trapdoor, which is too heavy for Nell to move, so Letty has to move it. And it turns out, oh my goodness, we're in the palace. And so she's having a panic attack, because I guess this is the one place she didn't want to come back to.
Yeah, they managed to get to the end because they got to the door at the end of the dungeon, but they needed the four pieces to open the door. It's one of those dungeons. Yeah. Letty points out,
key,
like,
and the queen key. And
yeah. Didn't they make that a joke in one of the recent Resident Evils that all the weird architecture has been designed by this one mad fucking designer who's just really obsessed with you getting the different color keys and patterns and puzzles to just fucking walk through your house? It's a good joke.
It was a joke used already in this series, as the area points out.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's the same architect is what I'm saying, yeah. Good stuff.
Last episode next week.
I'm going to miss this. This is great, Craig.
It is. The theme tune's available on your various digital services over here. So
excellent.
And then we got Megalobox Nomad, episode 11.
Okay,
here we go. Crack at the long title here.
Wait, you want to go? I did that last time. Or,
I'll give it a lash, but I have not practiced this at all. Cuando te quitas la amarura que no te puertas quitar, brotan las semelas de la miseria de la dicha.
That's pretty good.
When removing the armor that cannot be taken off, the seed of fortune and misfortune sprout. And they say, at a small celebration after the storm, Joe explains what had happened in the time that he had disappeared and announces his intention to fight Mac on the ring, while Mac comes up on a shocking revelation.
I did like that. Like, you know, most shows like this would be really fucking easier if the characters would just sit down and explain what the fuck happened. And Joe literally goes like, okay, here's what's happened to me. You guys haven't been privy to this. Here's what happened to me this season when you weren't here. And also, like, in between seasons, this is, let me just lay it out for you guys. That was thank goodness.
And also, thankfully, it's not a clip show. I was worried it was going to be a clip show when you started going into that.
Because it has that clip with him training with Chief. At the start, a scene we didn't see, but it's like, ooh, this feels like it could fall into the show. It does not.
No.
It was like, let me tell you everything that happened, and you, the audience, have already watched that and kind of cuts. It's like, and that's everything that happened to me.
Yeah, it's important to them to hear all this, because for most of them, they kind of figured, oh, good, he's just come crawling back now. And he said, yeah, I was on the road. I was in underground fighting. I was kind of feeling sorry for myself, but that wasn't all I was doing. And he said, he's kind of showing that as well. It's like when they have a new opening for the gym, he's got all decked out in the flower ceremony, like he did with the community down south. And like, oh yeah, this is like, you know, something I picked up. I met a dude and he taught me a lot of important things. This is one of them. So it's like, oh, this is got to let Nambu's spirit back into here. You know, we got to show him home.
Show the way home.
And it is also the first episode where they go, oh yes, boxing gives you brain damage.
Yep. Who fucking knew?
I was like, oh, finally, somebody's actually come out and said it.
So, Joe fainting in the last episode, they take him into a doc, they have him get a full workover, he gets like a fucking CAT scan on the head and everything. He's like, yeah, he's got a few ulcers and stuff from taking drugs for years, but he's mostly okay. And it's like, he's okay though, right? And it's like, the doc's like, if you are a boxer for any length of time, or a decent length of time, you will get brain damage. Like, he does have damage. I'm not denying that.
Yeah, and they did say CTE, which is the thing you can't currently check until you're dead. So it would have been a little one step further if they'd gone as far as that, as to explain why nothing would show up on the scan.
They're being quite
good. You can manage the ability to walk again, but we can't check that just yet.
Well, to be fair, we got that in the real world as well. Because that was a couple of years ago. The thing, whatever they're basing the science in this off, was a real thing a couple of years ago. Because I know at work we had to rush to get the article up as quickly as possible.
Like, it's a bit more sci-fi in that it allows you to use robot arms to box.
Yes.
But other than that, like, technically it's the same kind of thing. Yeah.
Hurting people, we got plenty of that. Healing them. Oh, okay. We're still figuring that out still.
And as with any good sci-fi, or all the best sci-fi, it's not about this futuristic, crazy technology. It's about now and things that it applies to now. And that one's got a fair one-to-one for it. And also, what are you using this medical technology for? Is it wars? Because if that's the case, then that's a problem.
Also, during this, when the bit in hospital, it did my brain did go to lo-fi hip-hop radio beats to recover from brain trauma too, because it gets very lo-fi hip-hop on its soundtrack in this episode.
I'm looking forward to this soundtrack coming out. I think it's another one I'm going to have on loops at several stages, yeah.
I don't mind it. It's better than kind of sad piano shit.
I liked it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
it's been on theme better.
The ubiquity of that YouTube channel and then jokes about that YouTube channel.
And then spin-offs of that. And then different iterations of that. Best anime of all time. Most popular anime of all time.
Yeah, so they're basically, he's not going to go back in the ring unless the majority of Team Nowhere are on board with him doing it.
Yeah. Because it's just like, this isn't just my decision to make. I want your guys' input on this.
And it won't be Gearless Joe this time. And then meanwhile, we've got the Shirato company trying to find out by speaking to the wife if she's seen any side effects, and she denies that she has. But then, of course, Mac does have another episode and destroys the storybook.
No!
But luckily, in a later show, we'll talk about somebody who can replace that. So his son eventually kicks him out of the house, and he has to go and speak to your scientist fella and confronts him.
It was an interesting thing, like, because the wife is obviously trying to protect herself and the son from him.
Yes.
He's scared of him, because it's like, you're having another one of these episodes. And he's like, how many times has this fucking happened now that I've been blacking out? And it's more so the son's glare of, get the fuck out of here.
Yes.
Just from a little kid that he's like, oh, Jesus, what the fuck have I
done? And it's also,
I mean, like she's used to this, because there's, I've last counted the amount of times you flipped out like this. I'm just trying to keep the young lad away from it as much as I can, but it still happens.
Yes. And it's because she feels guilty, because she's the one who agreed to for him to have the treatment in return for the kid getting a new, whatever organ it is that he needed to survive. Yeah.
Because his injury would have been okay with physical therapy. It was recoverable from. But it's like, we got a heart transplant for your kid on the side if you want to give him a brain chip. Just saying. Which, like, I don't think he blames her for it. Like, that was basically her being taken advantage of in a shitty situation.
And he's blaming Sakuma for, like, oh, this isn't really me winning these matches. And Sakuma's explaining, no, the device doesn't give you the skills that you've got in the ring. The Mac time is you. That's something you've come up with because of your ability.
That wasn't part of the program. Like, I'm guessing it does kind of something like...
It does something, but it's not designed to do that, I think. Is the thing.
Yeah, like when his brain shuts down, it goes into pure muscle memory. Like when he heard the ding of the glass and he was like, ding, ding, oh, we're fighting now. Or... Like it's more so he's thinking with his spine rather than his upper kind of conscious thoughts. So he's kind of moving on instinct. And there, when you move pure on instinct, like there's no real defense from it, because you can't react to it quick enough. It's just reaction that he is. Yeah.
There's a bit where he's Sakuma, though, is an absolute asshole when he shows up to that party that he wasn't
invited. Oh my god, he's such a dick.
Oh, sorry. Oh, I'm coming in. I know you just got done talking about I'm as well. I am also important. It's like, oh, do get out. We do just get the fuck out. And you're just like, oh, so nice of you to come. What the fuck are you doing here?
And him kind of going like, I didn't think you'd resort to spying. So I said I'd just cement our relationship more publicly on your private party kind of thing. It's just like, bleh.
Wait to the people. Small smile, big smiles.
Yeah. Ugh, prick.
Fucking is. And one as well is just like, wait for him talking to MacBone saying, no, MacBone, you're just like, you've done things beyond expectations. No, it's all you, baby. You're making sacrifices, you know, for your family, man. I just want to think about your family, all right? You know, this is really like trying to fucking, always a fucking, trying to sell something on a pitch. It's about the fucking their health, about the fucking their family. It's about to be the fun salesman about, no, man, they got a great idea. Got a great vision for you. Talk to him like a person, not a fucking like asset that you want. Jesus Christ.
But the way he's constructed the narrative around Mac and everything, like, Mac cannot back out of this fight. Mac can go like, I don't want to fucking fight anymore. It's just like, no, you gotta. Like, whereas, and it's so neatly contrasted with Joe's thing. It was like, I need everyone, or the most people, to be okay. I need Morby to be okay with me fighting than not okay with me fighting, because he's changed his thing. Like he's basically like, I'm going to use this gear, fight defensively, because I fought without abandon, without gear before, because I didn't give a fuck. I was basically fighting to live, and I wasn't fighting to live beyond that. Whereas this, I plan on surviving this and coming back to you. Which is like super red flags, but
that's what Stellar brings. I've been sat to you around and saying, like, I'm fine, yeah, looking around. You want to fight? You want to fight Mac? One saying, yeah, I do. All right. Well,
he wants to push himself, but he doesn't want to push himself and break. Basically, he doesn't want to hit his breaking point.
He doesn't want to run out on him again, whether it be by running out or by dying in the rain. So that's the stick with him. And Satchi was all for it as well. He's got a new set of gear to work on. He hasn't done a gun near that in years. He's straight in there from tweaking it, tinkering around with it. Yeah, he's all about this.
So it's a really nice contrast between him and Mac, like where Mac has been forced into a situation of like possibly not surviving, and Joe wants to survive. And I feel like they could flip that on us, narratively wise. Yeah. It's doing a good build up to the fight. I'll give it that.
And it ends on its little story again, and you're like, okay, who's the hummingbird? Is it Sukuma the hummingbird luring Mac with his song, or is it Joe?
Is Joe going to be the guy who shows him the way home, kind of thing? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, we'll see. Two more episodes. I'm now more in the thinking that no, neither of them are going to die at the end. That they're probably going to wring out a third season out of it.
If they have something else to go with, sure.
Yeah, they got Joe versus Lue, haven't they? So.
I wouldn't mind. I think it's doing good now, tying it back that first little arc with Chief and community, the immigrant community, was such a good little self-contained little storyline. If you just got that, it'd be fine by itself. But I'm thinking like, no, that was like our good team, our strong team we want to operate now. We're going to try and bring that forward all the way through. And it's coming to the fore a little bit now. We get to the back half of it here.
Yeah. It's still having emotional plot, character development resonance. I think it would have been a mistake if they had that good idea for a story and they spent a whole fucking season doing it. I think that would have been a mistake. But the fact that it's something that makes the later stuff stronger, I think works quite well.
Yeah, and they didn't forget about it at this point. It wasn't just like, oh, Joe was feeling sorry for himself. He met a dude and then he died, but he taught him a valuable lesson. And said, no, he's still thinking about it. He's still like, that, and we're also like seeing it again, because that's when Joe sort of realized I've had this resonance, especially amongst these people, right way, without realizing or appreciating it. I should like be more aware of that and cognizant of it, and maybe be a bit more respectful of people who look up to me. You know, they put their hopes into me, so I should try and repay that in some way or live up to it.
Mark, check your connection, Niall. Stuttering a lot.
Well, I stutter in general when I get too excited, but I try not to. Let someone else talk then for a little bit.
Okie doke. Well, in which case, Dwayne, it's up to you to tell me all about Fruits Basket, the final season, episode 11. Goodbye.
Oh, Niall, I need your help.
I'm trapped.
Where do we end off last episode? Was there was the tearful reunion, and then she fucking legged it. So we're kind of like continuing on that for and it happens like a few times where he kind of gets ahead of her, catches up to her, and then she just legs it the other way. It's very funny because like onlookers are just looking at this poor ginger kid going like, ah, he's got dumped, that's rough, kid, you know. And he's just like, this is very embarrassing. We're trying to have our tearful reunion and work this shit out, but it's not quite getting there. How does it go down? Because obviously we get a lot of internal monologues as people are chasing each other. Toru's basically, she's basically kind of going, like she doesn't want to see him again because the last time she saw him, he was like, get away from me. I don't want to see you. I'm disappointed by you. And that very thought, like even in hospital, like brought her straight to tears.
It's always running in the back of her head. It's just like, yes, gotta be good, gotta be good, gotta be a good girl, gotta be a good girl. Because if you're not a good girl, people go away from you. Gotta be good, gotta be good. And
but the idea of having to stay away from this,
ingrained in her.
yeah, this, the idea of staying away from this person who means so much to her just caused her to like openly weep. So just like, I'm just going to like not have him in my life. I'm just going to run the fuck away from him when he's there. It's not a very well thought out plan, but it's all she has at the moment in survival mode, I suppose. Yeah. In comparison to that, got to be the good girl thing that she has. Yeah.
Yeah. He's coming off and saying, look, I've been crappy about that. You know, I've been accepting of you accepting me, because I haven't been able to accept me. So how could I let anybody else do it as well? I didn't think I was one worked up to it, and I didn't maybe appreciate how much I might impact yourself for, because you know all about this. You know who I am. You've seen me for who I am, and you've actually brought out who I actually am, or who I used to be anyway, or who I want to be.
Yeah.
And I don't want to like reject you because of that. So I'm saying, after this, baby, one more time. I won't need any more second chances after this. Can you love me? Okay, live the rest of my life with you, please.
And it works out pretty good. They get to have a smooch, and he's like, "Hey, I know I'm gonna turn into a cat straight away, but can we have a hug? Can you bring it in for a hug? Because I just want to hold you because I care about you." They do that, and then nothing happens.
All through the town, a creature was stirring.
Because nobody turned into creatures anymore.
Nope. Well, they all know us. They all get that feeling. It's just like I am is on the couch. It's just like. Me and Nick, come in here for a minute. Yes, sir. Imagine if you go to the shop and saying, come here for me a moment. Do you know how much I've always wanted to do this? It's like, oh, sir. It's like, oh, yeah, no, it's not, not to be. Oh, it's meant to be, baby. It's going to be for a long time. It's like, oh, yes, we can finally do our sexy dress up together.
Yeah, they have a lot of fun stuff like different contrasting ones, because obviously we have the kid where she's the tiger and she's with her. Essentially, who's going to be her boyfriend and his little sister, and she's just crying because it's like, oh, this connection is actually kind of cutting me deep. But when we kind of do that against Shigure, he's just like, oh, so that's what it feels like. Just like cold, deadpan, standard fucking Shigure kind of thing. And other like the rest of them are kind of reacting kind of how you'd expect from that. That kind
of thing. There's a nice one where Rin gets it. It's just like, what the fuck was that? And Harrow's going, yeah, it's pretty shit, right? But don't worry about it. I'm still here. But it's the totally fun, cool. It's like, hey, baby, come on over here. Come here for a hug. Totally. It's all cool.
Him kind of going like, yeah, it's lonelier than I thought it would have felt. But he's not really reacting to it on the outside because, yeah, that's how his emotions run deep. And it's kind of like a nice contrast between that. And we did have a shot of, in Toru's kind of monologue of... Akido talking to Toru and going like, oh, you're so pure and I'm fucking dirty, I'm a horrible person, and Toru kind of going like, well, based off of those estimations, I am also not fucking pure. I've done shitty things, I've thought and done selfish things, so I mean, like, I can still be your friend, so I'm not so above you, and it's wrong to think of people as above or below, so we can still be friends, we're still cool.
We're both just trying to keep these people in our lives. I mean, maybe did things that weren't really in character for us, or that weren't really what we should have been doing. You know, we're both sort of trying to kind of play a part here. I've been doing it ever since, like, I was with my mom. I was trying to be the perfect good girl, even though I would get pissed off or get sad or whatever. But I want to be the perfect good girl. The same way you want to be like the all-omnipotent God. You found your way to do that. No, you think fear was a better way to keep them close to you, so that's I kept them there, but they didn't want to be there, and it's no wonder that they had to try and do it, but they left it because we're just trying to keep people in our lives, trying to hang on to these connections. But as we go back through the rest of the tale of God having the first banquet with all the animals, because God was only in the mountaintop, so he sent us some invitations. Actually, the cat was the first to come. It's like, oh, if a cat's gonna come, maybe more of them will come. So 12 of them all came, had a great dinner, and said, and God says, oh, but if we're going to get old and die one day, I know, we'll make a wish and sign a forge a pact together where we will reincarnate over and over and we'll all have dinner together. But the cat says, no, dude, that's not right, because we can just be obviously looking on to what's going to come next. It's like, why can't we enjoy the time we have now and this acceptance for all that at the air?
Yeah, the cat is like, the thing of like...
point there.
Being mortal is a gift, because you get to you get to enjoy the time for what it is and not it just being a repeating pattern. And it's precious because it was once. It's precious in its limited thing. Like this is like God's kind of like, fuck you, cat. As you're dying, I'm going to say, and all the other animals are like, yeah, that's mean. Don't say mean stuff to God. God's got a cool plan.
Yeah.
So what initially becomes like a promise of rekindling friendship and everything became a curse.
Became like a yoke that kept them there.
Yeah, yeah.
As much as you might want them to stay, they're going to leave, whether it be through, you know, they might move to a different town, they might pass away. Or they might still try and escape you because they resent your attempts to try and keep them or somewhere they don't want to be. You got to just enjoy the time you get with them and move on, because you will find that if you, the more you try and just like clutch it to you, it'll just run through your fingers like sand, and you'll all be miserable and you'd all be alone. Whereas, you know, you got to kind of let these things proceed as they're going to go on. You might be God, you might be told that you're God all your life, but you will find that you're quite powerless to change that if it's going to happen.
A few other endingy bits I quite liked was Akido like dropping to her knees, like going like, okay, I'm feeling all these connections sever all at once, but it's like, it's okay for me to feel this pain now because I can reforge different kind of connections that you make and maintain rather than ones that trap and bind you. And it just like to like, it's okay to be sad in the moment because sadness passes and stuff. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's all very well done. But I also really like the Kyo realizing his connection severed and kind of turning away from Toru. Is like, oh, is he gonna get really upset and cry? He's like, no, he just fucking tears that bandaid off.
Where was he? Get the fuck out of here.
And it's Toru ends up crying on that. And even him like meeting up with his actual dad and telling him, is like, hey, look, I'm not wearing the thing anymore, I'm cured, I'm okay, everything's gonna be okay.
So, my son.
Again, we're getting the super happy ending, but there is moments of sadness among it, because of course it is. It's this show.
it's a nice set, though. It's more like an elation, like, you know, it's like, oh, yes. They can get on with their lives now. They're not going to forget like what they've kind of been through, but it's made the person they are today. They're able to kind of reckon with who they are right now. So for better or worse, they are who they are, and now they're free to just get on with things. Being who they are and having to worry about getting locked up in a house as soon as you've graduated high school. Yeah, so probably got a victory lap bit this week, and more meeting God later on this late, I think imminently, in fact.
Then we've got Odd Taxi, episode 11. If we could go back to that day, in which our first half of the episode is a big old flashback sequence from Nikaido, which feels very much like the sequel to the Takada episode, which was his flashback. Even though those stories are not related, are they? Who knows? We open with the audition, where she's talking about how like her main skill is being pretty, and that's why she's auditioning, that's why she wants to become an idol, so she can make use of that skill.
And she's both like kind of not disgusted but like jealous and admiration of this other girl who is just like, not only is she super talented, but she works really fucking hard at it. So it's a combination.
She's multi-talented, she's got a famous father, and we get a very lingering shot on the little mascot she's got in her bag, so I assume that'll be important later.
Because I think it lingered on it when it said something like she has like refined taste or something like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was definitely like, this is a clue, probably.
Refined taste.
Also,
it is involved somehow. Yeah.
Also, Shiho was here. We then like get some sequences of them doing their idol lessons. And they point out that even though they were doing that, they have to go to school, they have to at night come and do idol training, but Yuki was still doing all her extracurricular activities at school as well.
Yeah, she was still in track and field or something like that. So just real hard worker all machine. Around. Yeah, yeah.
And it was 18 months of training before their debut. And they were being interviewed by Homo Sapiens on the radio, who they just could not stand, and or she could not stand, and then she runs into
Babu. Who are these fucking nobody comedians fucking taking the piss out of us? It's like they're comedians, so that's what they do.
She runs into Babu on the train. Yeah, on the bus the train. Yeah, and she hates him to begin with, but then she finds his lack of ambition attractive. But also, we also see he's a nice guy. He gets and gives his seat to an old lady who's come on board.
He doesn't happy, have happy like with his lot. It's just,
he doesn't have high aspirations. And there's something appealing about just like I'm just like I'll do the best I can, but if I don't get anywhere, that's okay. It's fine.
I'm a veg of man, you know. At the end of the day, maybe you just want to go home and watch some telly. That's maybe all you got planned that day, and that could be all right. But would she be all right if she had to be the prettiest?
And then they're discussing in the park why they want to become idols. Shio wants money because she came from a poor family. And Yuki was just doing it for the experience, but once she saw how good Nakaido was, she thinks that they might achieve something amazing. When a famous producer comes in to inspect them, he's like, oh, I want this girl as the lead, Yuki. And so Nakaido plans to confront Yuki to get her to stand down, and if she doesn't want to stand down, she's going to murder her. And she invites her to the office on October the 4th. And the trains will have stopped running at the time, so she hires a taxi and Nakaido pays for it. But when Nakaido gets there, she finds Yuki already dead.
Someone beat me to it.
And then Yamamoto is also at the office and discovers Nakaido finding Yuki dead.
I thought he was called in. Okay.
No, I know he's coming up and saying, oh, what? Oh, I'm just coming back to get some files. What happened here?
Did you do this? No, but I was planning on. Here's everything up to now, explaining her whole deal.
I'm going to have to call a couple of friends to sort it out. And it's a large polar bear and a rapping porcupine.
a strange rapping man.
And didn't understand a word he was saying, but he just says, "We got to hack up this body, yo." And you got to do it.
There's lots of things said that people in less stressed situations might pick up on, and I didn't even pick up on it the first time I watched it. I picked on the second one. Though this one I did pick up on the first time was that Yano, he's talking about how he doesn't like seeing corpses, but he's the one who declares that she's been choked and bludgeoned, and we're like, who did we see somebody trying to murder somebody by choking in the previous episode?
With his fucking belt.
And so they take her body to their hideout, and then they cut her up and throw her in the river.
Job done.
Yes, they submit a missing persons, and then they get the family to withdraw it later. That's the way they're going to cover it up.
To make it look like that she ran away from home rather than
And they'll also hire
looking for a body.
A new Yuki, Sakura Wadagaki.
And I mean, like, claiming to the family is like, oh, we're only hiring her in so that when your daughter comes back from running away, that her place in the band is still taken, because they're still debuting. That's the only reason we're doing this, not replacing a person. No. We're just going to call her the old one's name so we can just, like, just keep on trucking.
Merchandise. We don't talk about the guy we print nothing.
And we're reminded again that she's always eating fried chicken here. And we also learned that she was told she came fourth in the auditions, and her motivation is she wants to be famous. Whereas Nakaido is still thinking, if only Yuki Matsuya was here. And they want to track down the taxi to get hold of evidence that Yuki took the taxi to the office. And they've given that job to Yano. And we then learned that Baba was, she was like, he was driving, making her paranoid, but Baba supported her, and that took her mind off the murder until the body was found. And then back to the present, it's Christmas, and everyone's discussing that they've identified the body. So this means Odakawa won't be able to use Yamamoto as part of his plan. And Dobu's also like, Yano's moved his base because they found the body nearby it.
So they're going to move their base, obviously. So we have to change the plan a bunch, change the intricately very, not too complicated, but relying on a bunch of factors plan.
Yes. So Odakawa rings up Yamamoto and tries to confirm who it is he took to the office, but Yamamoto hangs up on him. He then tries to ring Little Diamond, and he's also not picking up. We've got Yano and Sekiguchi traveling with Imai in the car to pick up the cash, and Imai's super depressed because Yuki's dead, so the record's not going to be released.
What's the point?
Yes, he's now thinking.
It doesn't matter that I've been kidnapped by gangsters for a week so they can take my billion yen or whatever it is he won, because my favorite band is going to be fucking like disbanded. This sucks.
And, just take it. I don't want it no more.
And yeah, it's like, shut up, kid. I'm talking about how I'm going to defeat Domu. Okay, I've finished how I'm going to defeat Domu. What was it you wanted? Can you put the press conference on? Okay, we'll do that. And then we get the and then there's a line of dialogue here that...
there's so many bits that are just like...
Yamamoto says something, and he should be saying Mitsuya, but he says Wadagaki's face in relation to the face that Odakawa remembers. And I'm like, does he not realise that he said that name and not Mitsuya? Because it's like, everyone's stressed out, so in theory, Nakaido would have corrected him or spotted it. But it's the sort of thing where... I didn't spot it the first time we went through the episode that he said Wadagaki at that point instead of Mitsuya. Because earlier in the episode, you've confirmed that they're after the recording, supposedly because of Mitsuya's face. But now he's acting as, and says Wadagaki's face.
And that would confirm like stuff like Odakawa going like, I don't have a fucking clue who that is.
But the question is, did he bring Wadagaki there on October the 4th? And was it Wadagaki who murdered Yuki?
Yeah. Okay.
Because he remembers that. He sees the face in the news and said, that wasn't her. That wasn't
the one.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. There's some other things in those little radio plays, because in particularly the truth, it's the truth, the two truths and a lie, but they've mixed them all up.
They don't know who you're reading. It's like one person said they did a murder. Who wrote that? We don't fucking
know. And one person said they had plastic surgery.
Yeah.
Which would be like why she looks like Mitsuya, but a little off. And that's why it's confusing Odakawa with mental imagery.
And the other thing, it being like, is it that could the actual girl be still alive, but like someone else has got plastic surgery to not look exactly like her, like undercover? There could be a lot of fucking things kind of going on with it.
Okay, Yakuza gave it to me.
Yeah.
Then Homo sapiens are falling apart. Bambi's arguing that you're the guy's out of touch, but he's admitting that he's also not trying very hard at trying to be successful as stand-up comedians, so we should split up after this. Garrick is in the library, where he discovers Odakawa's parents' deaths, which was a double suicide with their kid in the car.
A double suicide! Yeah, sure. Okay, but...
didn't seem to be affected as much as they could perceive much negatively in no kind of long term psychological damage that they could pick up anyway, but I think something went out of whack that day.
Certainly because he's definitely thinking about the drowning rather than the deaths of the parents, isn't he? So we get a press conference where Yamamoto tries to suggest that a fan did it.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying they've had a lot of more contact with the fans, and therefore they would have had access to do such a horrendous act. But I'm not saying they did it.
Yes.
Which is just ooh, you bastard, yeah.
Big Diamond shows up for Odakawa's cab.
He said, hey, have you seen my little brother?
He's hiding from me around as well. Lately. Yeah. And Odakawa was like, it's funny we're now on the same side. Big Diamond says, we've been on the same side since the beginning. And he looks at the bird ornament in the car.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, Dobu waits and waits and waits. And then we get Gariki at Odakawa's post-accident pediatrician. And they're discussing how he recovered. And they mention some memory notes. Who the paediatrician doesn't want to give them to Gariki, as he's like, you don't really see them, need to see them as your GP. And he's like, I don't want to see them as his GP. I want to see him as his friend.
Yeah, and you know it's like, oh, he was such a strange child. He had a wild imagination. I'm guessing it's like, here is this man. He is a horse. Yes. And it's just like, I assume it's going to be filled with that shit.
Yeah, he's a madman.
The other thing I think is in this episode, in the flashback, is that we see a bunch of the Don again.
Yes.
Yeah. So he's like, I think this is the most we've seen him, because we just saw him sitting in the background in a panel show and as an eraser, and those are the only bits we've really seen him in so far. This is the most we've seen of him, and it's still like cut shots of his face and fist.
And it's clenching. Like, okay, so there's definitely something up with, like, okay, why is the father presented as an ape and the daughter presented as a cat? Which is why I think we're going to reveal what's in the cupboard is just a cat. But he's somehow imprinted on one of whichever cat it was he took in the taxi.
It's amazing how much they can reveal in this episode and in general of the show. Like, it's like, oh yeah, here's your theory. That was right. Oh yeah, see this one? That connects the dots, doesn't it? And now you've 50 million more fucking questions.
You've eliminated so many people as a murderer, but you've definitely left you two possibles, maybe a third with Shiho. Maybe it's all a red herring and she's the one who's done it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, it's definitely got to be somebody within the Mystery Kiss organization, you would assume at this point.
Yeah, that's
you got some shady characters, like, you know, affiliated with organized crime, certainly, but they're just doing their thing. They just are the due to call them because you got into this mess to begin with.
Unless it all ties into the theme of people dying in car accidents, whether she died in a car accident and somebody left the body there.
Yeah. I mean, like, we have seen someone try to strangle someone in a car as well. So, yes, that would fit. And it fits again with the thing of Odakawa. I presume it was something with his parents that they were disposed of in a car to make it look like a double suicide. But, like, again, like killing someone in a car with a car, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Because why did that foundation take him in? Why?
Yeah,
obviously, you know, it would be like humanitarian, it'd be like that kind of work, it'd be kind of for a charity thing they would do. But why he involved of a particular children?
Yeah,
because they kind of just do this for all kids, could they? So why him?
Anyway, it's absolutely cracking. There's like this and Pui Pui Melkar for me are just like head and shoulders above everything else so far this year. And indeed, most years, I would say.
Yeah, that's fair. Very strong contenders for like best of the decade so fucking early in.
It's just very disarming, you know. Like, it's being said, this is like Animal Crossing bullshit. Yeah, but it's also very hard-boiled, like, murder mystery thriller, and it never really diverts from that. In fact, the imagery of it, while kind of humorous at times, could all be, like, interlaced with the underlying tragedy of the whole thing as well. That's always hanging with it.
And you got that, like you said, very basic, cartoony, fun art style, like, contrasted so much with, like, again, the darkness, but also, like, kind of realistic, rounded kind of characters. Like, initially I thought, oh, this fucking monkey, he's just a thug. And I was like, no, he's just, like, a freaking low-level cog in the wheel. When he sees some kid, it's just like, oh, you're not actually trying to murder me. Let me give you some life advice, kid. And also rob you. Like, there's more two characters than one. No one's one note. That kind of way. Yeah.
In a way, because they're animals, it's you feel you can kind of empathize or sympathize with them more. Because I don't want to see them get beaten up. That's not nice.
he's a little shit, but he didn't deserve that. Yeah,
that's what it goes with the writers and directors. They want to tell like a human story with animal characters, and I think they're fucking definitely succeeding in both respects there.
From what I've seen of the comic, it looks pretty good as well.
Okay,
which is written by the same writer as the TV show. But yeah, I'm definitely fascinated by what the director does next, because this is the only thing he's directed in anime so far. So yeah, definitely going to be someone to watch from now on, I think. Then we've got Zombieland Saga Revenge, episode 11, All It Takes Is For You To Be There Saga. In which we open where the zombies are getting up, but they feel a bit. Sakura feels a bit wobbly on her legs, which is odd. She's not felt this bad since she first became a zombie. And then you've got all the viewers getting all the little clues as to what's actually happened before she.
It's a good, funny reveal. It's like, whoa,
Feels like I'm seasick.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Well, good thing with zombies, we've survived that ordeal, but our house is gone. It sucks.
It does wash up on the beach, and they do manage to take out the doll painting supplies. And they're like, should we go back in for our stuff? Yeah, probably. Entire house collapses.
I needed that. All of our instruments, shit, costumes, equipment is all fucked.
And mostly our makeup is the main problem, or is going to become the main problem. Yeah.
Yeah.
They've done the fast job because you have to, like, the onlookers and say, oh my God, your house, are you okay? Yeah, we're fine. Oh,
yeah, you should come down to the shopping mall. It's the new shelter, because the shelter also was fucking swept away in the storm. So come down to the shopping mall, the local one. I assume it's an actual place, but and they're there just trying to help out.
It is. The story is essentially the journalist going, all what the zombies up to this time, and slowly realizing he can't expose these zombies because they're such lovely zombies and the town loves them so much.
And it's the thing of, like, more importantly, they're idols, and we need idols to rebuild this prefecture.
Yeah, yeah. And it's the thing of, like, because that's the thing he initially said to your man, is like, how dare you abuse the corpses of these young girls who didn't ask to do this? And it's like, no, they're all very willing to partake and help in the community. Like, they're very on board with it.
They all fucking died well before their time, and
yeah,
a lot of them are on board with a second chance at trying to live it a little bit.
Mm-hmm. You know? I loved, like, a lot of the bits. I think my favorite was Ty. It's like, oh, you poor dears. It's like, come on, have some of the soup since you seem so hungry. And then, come on, have a bite to eat. And Ty just, like, latches onto her fucking head, and everyone's like, ugh. And she's like, oh, you are a hungry thing, like patting her. Yes. It's like, good Lord.
I mean, there's some good faces there, because the guy I do like their fucking shitty makeup, but doesn't really work and cracks off after a day or two because, oh, we need the real stuff to do us. Like, they've got some good, like, faces when I try to keep it all under wraps. It's like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. They used to use that, the doll painting supplies. Oh, just, like, making little kind of masks, and that'll be, like, a gimmick for the next little thing we're going to do to keep people's spirits up. Most of the kids keep their spirits up. It's like, oh, the mask cracked off. Oh, we're zombies. It's like, oh, I see. There's a double bluff there. You just put the masks on and actually your zombies are needed. That's different makeup. Yeah, we're just trying to spook you. We're zombies. Oh, we died in the flood, but we're okay now because we've got this idle spirit. Yep, that's right.
Yeah. Like, kind of going with, like, the little kids. It's like, you're not zombies. Zombies are scary. You're Franchushu. Yeah, we know you guys. You can't fool us. And it's just like the kind of reporter going, like, oh, they are Franchushu.
Children love them.
Meanwhile,
derailed this enterprise.
Kitaro is trying to avoid drowning and.
That was a scene that started, like, very, like, not funny and shit, but him just trying to hold the door closed, and then, like, he was in under, like, the underneath bar for, like, 2 days, right?
Yes.
But it's presented as such comedy thing where he's barely holding above water, where the cop is about to, like, leave them to fucking drown.
And try to keep his immortal buddy alive as well.
Yeah.
Because presumably, even if you're immortal, you're
out of food.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the final reveal is, yes, he is the kid from her past.
She's not quite, she doesn't really get it, but he obviously is.
So, that's, I guess, just a couple more episodes, I would guess. Feels like that way.
Just one or two more, like, you know, because it's going to end on, no, but it's going to be a big concert. But now it's going to be, like, a benefit concert for the whole prefecture. So they're doing the kind of work because, you know, idols are there to sell CDs and, you know, and new meetings and that, but also there, you know, the good ones are the best ones are to, you know, chip in and help promote things, whether it be a prefecture or whether it be, hey, earthquake relief. Let's help out with this. It's part of the show, keep people's spirits up. You know, it's tough times out there. Because
thing where it's like, we're not fucking canceling the gig. The date's still on. We still got the place.
We got 2 weeks. Turn this shit around.
Then we've got the final episode of Dino Zenon, episode 12, What Was I Entrusted With? Now, Grid Knight and Goldburn had been beaten up last episode, and Galma is dying from, which, based on the original Gridman, poison, I guess. That's how he was killed in the original Gridman episode, in the past.
Yeah, I think they do say something along those lines, that his poison didn't recede, that came back with him or something.
Mm. Yeah. And they don't have a fixer beam, so they can't repair him, but they can ease his pain. And then the rest of the Kaiju Genesis show up and get eaten, so they too get to pilot the Kaiju from inside.
Yeah!
Still part of the team.
Yeah. And the only way they're going to beat him is if they properly use Dino Zenon with the four pilots and combined with Grid Knight. But also, they'll have one more trick up their sleeve, and that will be to use Instant Domination.
That was such a fucking class bit.
Yes.
We're in the middle of this fight. It's cool. If you've gotten to one more time seeing the Dragon Kaiser Knight transformation sequence, that's pretty always going to be cool. The cape is going to be like a fashion accessory for years to come. it's like a fun. All combination is like almost evenly matched against their combination. You can't quite get like the leg up of them to have to get them all the way. And then for Yamugi, it's like, worked once, just for a minute, might work again. Because he's inside the big bazooka cannon on the shoulder. Yeah. One saying, pop off. And then finally, he gives a shot. Instance domination. Throwing the gang signs up. It's like, oh, that's good. Because that's the opening we need to get the upper hand on him. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of more so, I guess, a distraction. And we get to see him. We get to see his version of that as a conversation like later in the episode. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. We also get like they also like confront the eugenicists during the fight, and we get some of their motivations or almost non-motivations, which I'm guessing going back to those philosophical things, I'm like, is it supposed to be Zeno versus Epicurus's philosophies? Do our heroes represent Zeno?
Oh, I forgot about that.
The Kaiju Genesis represent Epicurus? Or I think that would be the way around it is, because I think it's like setting themselves achievable goals. Definitely seems to be more what the heroes are doing than the villains.
The villains, I think, for one thing, the difference in their goals is it's wants and needs. Is it like the villains are very much, I want vague concept, whereas the heroes want, I want actual thing, like achievable thing, that kind of thing. It's something along those lines. I don't have a good handle of it. Yeah.
It is as well as this, like, the eugenicists sort of like, kind of almost like the immature ones. It's like, I just want to bust out. I just want to fucking just smash things up. I just want to fucking like, indulge my ear as much as I can. And it's like, these. On heroes, then, in their own small way. What they have going on is comparatively small states. They don't want to, like, take over the world with giant monsters. They just want to just, like, I just sort of want to, like, get out of this lifestyle where I'm just lying in bed all day. I should get out and get a job, or maybe I should, you know, try and get past this trauma that's bugging me and trying to move on with my life. And they all kind of do on that. And what's kind of interesting as well is that these are all kind of little. They're important to you, but, you know, in the grander scheme, it might seem like very small sticks things, but they can still really affect you and get you as a person to the extent that, I wish I could be free of this thing that's bothering me and just, like, smash through like a giant monster. So any of these kids could have turned into Akane from the last series, but instead they faced up to it and they're like, no. Giant robots are cooler. I'll go with them, thanks, and save the world.
Yeah, because the three things worth protecting: promise, love, and the thing he never gets around to explaining what the third thing is, which I assume there's also like a little bit of it, him apologizing to Kiyomi for not talking to him much. So I assume Kiyomi represents the third thing that you never remember to actually tell anybody about.
Because that fits into everyone else's thing. And I guess Kiyomi's one is more like, ill-defined as a singular word, like lethargy, like giving up, that kind of thing. Yeah, something along those lines.
You just feel like you're in a rush. You just feel like you're stuck in place. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I did have a thought about what it was, and it has now escaped me.
That's the point of it. You can't remember. Yes. What's the third thing I need to remember not to do? Don't do it. Yes. Sure.
Because promises is obviously you make, because you can't keep promises at the start of the show, and then you can't keep promises by the end. And I guess love is Yamugi.
Like admitting to your feelings, like trying to put your fucking heart out there, potentially going to get hurt, but it's fucking worth it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the third thing. And the third thing. Don't stay in your bedroom, in your man's house.
But it's also tied up. It's also, it must might be something to do with pride, maybe. And it's, no, it's tied up with so many things related to Yumogi's boss, isn't it?
Key perspective and that on day, situation.
That day know. With the bag of money. It's all tied up to that.
Yeah. Like I guess not fulfilling your potential. Yes. It's a long, complicated
but
third
it is,
thing.
But yeah, it plays nicely because of it's like so many of these problems. It's like Galbert also needs fixing. He doesn't get fixed in any way. Like he's as bad as communicating as the rest of the Kaiju and Genesis are.
But he is the one. He betrayed them because welcome back to life. But actually went out. And got a job like on the building site, trying to actually find a good casting. While he went off and saw fucking Shark Man in 4D on your day off, it's like, well, it's great you've got all this free time to smash up buildings and go to the cinema, but I gotta go and fucking make ends meet here. It's tough, and I want to go and be in the role, but I have to, you know, pay the bills as well.
And then we get 3 months later, where Galba has died / disappeared.
I live in a farm somewhere.
Yes.
Because they were all ejected from Dinozenon. It went grey, like Optimus Prime.
holes in my heart.
Yeah, I don't know why they put these like philosophical concepts and like obfuscate them by having giant kaiju fights. At least that part makes sense to me. But then it's like, let's do a bunch of Transformers references to confuse Dwayne. It's like, fucking stop it. just tell me what your fucking deal is.
Well, Optimus Prime, he died and rose again in the third series.
And there's loads of death references as well, like with the Ankh and the ghost Woozer who's there, as opposed to the alive Woozer who was in Gridman.
What are our heroes doing now? And I like the fact, like, I could barely fucking recognize our guy. He's so clean cut now. In the suit and everything. He's unrecognizable.
And she's dropped out of school again. She's no longer covering up her tattoo.
Isn't she dropped out of school because the school was stepped on by a kaiju? I mean, like, you can't really go to school. It's closed for repairs.
That's a shame. Who could have done something like that?
I like the fact I was worried it was going to be like self-harm kind of things, which isn't bad, but I don't think it was handling it well. It was just like a tattoo and she was like pushed out of it for that. Like it was something that kind of showed her creativity and personality, that kind of thing.
Where was the intention that you kind of modified it? Maybe it was always a dragon like that, but it was a Gorburn. Manifested because of her this inner vision she had of it.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I like many of the things. It's like quite often, like the obvious answer turns out to be the actual answer. I noticed rewatched the first episode because I was trying to find those philosophical quotes that stopped happening.
Oh yeah, that would probably help a bunch.
their philosophy class, which had a different teacher every single class, which might suggest they kept on getting stomped on by kaiju. But right at the start, they said they're not allowed to do a haunted house for the festival because they're planning what to do in the festival.
Well, our teacher is dead, so we can do whatever we want.
Yay, everything worked out. Okay. I did love all the interactions with the kids in school where one of them's kind of elbowing the other one. That kind of stuff. And everyone's just like, oh, you should go find her, because they all know at this stage. It's like, is your girlfriend?
I know.
And them kind of... And him being a little like, I'm still that weird bug calling you your name.
And then
he still has a bunch of stuff to get over. She still has the trauma, but it's something you can live with and work with as you live.
Yeah. And you just got to, you know, this is something that you just kind of have to deal with.
Because your man's inconvenient.
It may not be what you want to do right now, but you'll be happier for it. Or people will be happier for it. You know?
Yeah. Yes.
You don't have to like all the way. Your mom's new boyfriend, but you can be civil, you know. And he did turn up to your school festival day, so you gotta give him that.
He's putting the effort in as well, sure. Yeah.
But definitely still a mystery as to why all their scars are in forms of Roman numerals.
Are they all numbered? Because I thought one of them looked like it was Roman numerals as well, but it also looked like a five, and I was like, is that like what position they were on the team? I'm number five. I'm number four.
Yeah, he also had a Yamogi also has one on his leg that we saw in the episode 10, I think, as he's escaping from inside the dream worlds that everyone's trapped in.
Okay.
Then we get this like flashback to him talking to Shimizu, presumably as he was doing the instance domination. And I'm like, there's also a line earlier on where they're talking about this is it, Kaiju have ended, and Yugelis with the spectacles looks up at Shimizu and says, no, something along the lines, no, it's not. So
like a couple of things when the lads and Goldburn and take, I guess, Dino Zenon are the parts of it. It's like, all right, we'll see you guys later. We're going off on our space boat. I'm not exactly sure how this works.
Yes.
But they open like a world that looks like the digital world. Yes. And Yumogi's conversation is taking place in the Windows screensaver.
Yes, it is. Yes.
Well, it's like how the
pipes.
What you call lines and pipes are in the digital world. Yeah.
So it's kind of suggesting that there is. Like I think we were saying, like that this is—it's not that this is a fake world, that this is a digitally created one of many worlds. Yeah,
yeah. Possibly, or it's the world created at the end of Gridman.
Yeah. But there's still that underlying
where they fixer-beamed it and turned it into a real Earth. So I guess there's two Earths: there's one Earth which has real people in it, and the second Earth which has people who used to be digital people but are now real anime people in it.
Yes.
It'll all be explained in the movie, I'm sure.
I'll be explained in Gridman X Dino Zenon.
Yes.
Coming soon.
Yes. That is the great trick, is that there are still so many mysteries from this series that the show made no attempt at ever answering.
It basically didn't even ask them. It's like, they're just there in the background. That's not what I'm going to be fucking talking about.
There was
about.
That hand. Who was the hand who put all the seeds of the kaiju in the very first episode? Because you're like, is it Shimizu? Because Shimizu is always wearing fingerless gloves in every appearance, and that is a non-gloved hand doing it in the very first episode.
It was God.
But it's at night, though, so you can't quite tell whether it's the same skin tone as Shimizu's got.
Sure.
But how much they kind of mirror and tie things back, it would be quite important to have these little kind of scenes in mind for the next thing, was if I got a mirror or reflect back on them again. Because they do it as well in here, like one of the first things into the grid man is the stars coming together, but then at the end this is where they all fly apart. It's like, they've got to go their separate ways now, but they were this connection is still there. Yes. They've formed little connections.
Yeah, so they've announced Gridman X Dino Zenon. It feels like it should be a movie, it feels like, with that title.
I mean, I'd be fine with it being a show, but yeah.
It would be in the fine tradition of robots / superheroes / robots and superheroes teaming up to fight each other, but then they would fight the real enemy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I feel like from this you'd not see the last of Shimizu as well as... You'd probably see the rest of the Kaiju Eugenicist, but I'm not even sure he was a Kaiju Eugenicist in the first place. Because that was the other thing. He's in the flashbacks in 10.
They're all being half-blooded. We're going to take on Dino Zenon, whatever thing. But when they're getting knocked back, he's just like doing he's not really fucking even there half the time.
Yeah, he's in the flashbacks in episode 10, but he's always positioned off to the side as if, was he actually ever really there?
Like, edited in, basically. Yeah.
Like that one kid in a room, that classmate is always off there, out of view. You can't quite focus on him. He's just like...
Yeah, because for a
you
guy...
You know he's there, but you can't quite...
Yeah. For a guy who's the leader, it's like he says nothing in any of those flashbacks, whereas the other three are still talking.
I presume, Gauma's okay, based off the fact that when they took Dino Zenon into the digital world, it kind of turns around with its eyes lit up again, which suggests that someone's alive and they're working it. Yeah.
Or it's the original one from the original Gridman series. Well, wait and see. At least with this, I'm fairly confident we'll get a follow up. Unlike Back Arrow, episode 24, do we head for the stars?
Oh, you will.
I'm surprised that people
stay on till morning.
I'm surprised people expect a sequel from this, and also one. What? It's perfect. Why would you do anything to it? It's fine. It's a self-contained thing. Yes. And then they had more adventures. That's all you need. Like, you grin.
Well, my main reason is because I've seen Nakashima pull this ending in Kamen Rider Force, where it's like, okay, we're going to meet the presenters. Okay, is that going to happen in the film? No, it's not happening in the film. Is it going to happen in any of the director-video specials? No, it's not happening in any of those director-video specials. Is it going to happen when they bring them back 10 years? No, it's still, they've still not met the presenters. So if they do a Back Arrow sequel, I want them to meet the cast of Kamen Rider Falls coming in the opposite direction.
Oh, hey guys, where are you going?
Oh, we're finally going to see the presenters.
Good for you. At the end of Blue Loco, when there's like just a high five and tags in on the face from Little Witch Academia. It's like, you dirt.
Yeah. And also, I went back and watched the last episode of Kamen Rider Falls, and there's a baby right at the start of the episode as well.
Freaking babies ruining everything with their.
That means Back Arrow is a prequel to Kamen Rider Falls. That's that baby.
Oh man, so much stuff happens in this episode, as you'd expect.
We got to fight / convince God.
Yes, but meanwhile, we also got to fight Rudolph. And his pal.
Because he's like, oh, I've been abandoned by God. This is a test by God. Because he's crazy.
Yes. And the general's going to do some cool stuff as well. They get to do another one of Zetsu's attacks.
Look at that. We can do combo attacks disc. To make up for that awesome dude as well. Yeah.
And
it's like, obviously slowing him down because he's like, like his big robot's getting kind of lazy here. So it's just like, if you just believe you can hurt him, you will hurt him. All right.
Yeah.
They do so good against him that ghosts appear to fight him as well.
I should say Prax does her brother's attack too. So
that's true. Yeah. You get a lot of that.
Yes.
Her brother doesn't come back as a ghost.
No, well, that's because there's a scientific explanation as to why they aren't to come back as ghosts. Because Rudolph had been cocky and he turned the pinnacles into a weapon, meaning that their conviction could not be sent to God. So their conviction is still here.
We didn't get downloaded to God because you broke the aerial, dipshit.
Back Arrow's earnest plea is what allowed us to rematerialize in this plane.
So we're here to kick your ass for the very short amount of time we can exist here as ghosts. Or conviction ghosts, I guess. Yeah.
Anyway, meanwhile, God is explaining that this is the... Which Brian Aldiss novel is it? It's non-stop.
I did like the fact that you one kind of says, like, hey, we fucking got this far. You should at least explain it to us. He's like, oh, yeah, no, fair enough. I probably should explain it to you. Yeah. Before I destroy you. That's fair.
Yeah, so there was a giant space fleet carrying the survive, like, God's race.
Yeah,
the Forerunners. No,
the Forerunners. This is the only surviving ship, and so the ship is, all the systems are set to keep a newborn God alive.
So that the race can persist, I guess, yeah.
And it turns out they've been keeping them as a baby for 2,000 years.
We don't want to kill any babies, but we also don't want to get killed ourselves. So what do we do with this? Back Arrow says, I'll take the care of the baby.
Yes.
Just give it to me.
I will take the baby to Mordor, but I do not know the way. And it's just like, you can't even conceive of this. It's a, like, you're very small. Baby, very big. You cannot conceive how big this baby is, basically. God, like, just, not God doesn't get frustrated, but I would have.
My conviction is, I can carry giant babies whatever I want. That's basically what it will be anyway.
But they struggle to fight because they don't have the big old conviction circuit above below them to power them. But that's okay because the people of Lingland will send all their conviction through the channels to them.
Ghosts basically go like, we're going to shoot you at Back Arrow to be conviction as our last act of as being conviction ghosts. Yeah.
Yes. Bit goes berserk.
By the way, this all comes in the form of a giant fist for pure conviction as well.
Yes.
Just shoots off from the planet and into space.
It's weird the way I say it. Like, the only bit I thought was a little weird, because the whole fucking thing is weird, but like, was the princess's dark form going to, you did good, kid, kind of thing. Yes. But that's you. How can... God, it's so confusing.
Yes, but that's the voice inside yourself that you often ignore it. And no, you do a good job with that, but you think, nah, I'm only grand, I'm only fine, I'm only middle and fun. Saying, no, that was a good thing you did. That's a good robot you made. Good rocket punch you just did there. You saved the entire universe.
Yeah, I like the bit where Bit's like, and I'll make Back Arrow's bright height huge as well, so it can be carried by the combined giant robots.
It's just really good. It's like all the characters have seen. People can just make up whatever bullshit they want and go on it, and they call that like a super attack. Well, I'm going to do a super attack with a name as well. God, Grand Stutter and Cross. Shishisha. It's like, oh yeah, like that's cool. It did work because you believed in it, because you gave it a cool name. Anyone can do that. This is about empowerment and motivation.
We do get all the dead people come back and salute them at some point as well.
I think it's while they're being punched towards Back Arrow so he can fight God.
Yes.
They're all just there. Good job, Zetsu and everything, and all of them. Yeah.
And yeah, they don't actually beat God. God just gets told by the supervising systems that control him to stand down. That they go,
oh no, Back Arrow's gonna bring him to his own planet. Oh yeah, no, fucking let's go with that. And God's like, what?
It's highly irregular.
God's basically getting control all deleted. It's just like, yeah, no, you don't get to do your thing.
Yeah, so it was kind of a mix of both of the Atlee's and Kai's plan. They beat him up and convince the system.
They wanted to talk to his supervisor, and it worked. Yes.
So they don't need ships anymore. They go to God's realm, they find out where they've come from, and so then we get like a little flash forward where you're set out in a ship.
In Dino Xenon, the 1 month later is like, hey, we're all living our lives, yes. And it's just like, yeah, we're all doing better now, whereas Back Arrow's 1 month later, well, I see you're going into your space mission. It's just like the opposite fucking
thing. By the way, God exists. we're going to go meet him.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're going to take the baby back to where it came from, a planet called Earth.
What? What that sound like?
I did like the generals just being absolutely, totally confused by everything that's being explained to you.
What's a rocket?
Oh, don't worry, I've reprogrammed the thing so that doesn't happen anymore. I've reprogrammed reality as we know it, so it doesn't feed on conviction anymore. Yeah. And, all right, the girl who fancies my gay boyfriend, you take care of him while I'm gone. It's just very, very strange.
Is that
strange,
the first time we see her with her eye? When that?
I think so, yeah. It was a good way to use it, all right, yeah. Just a lot of fun stuff.
Yes.
And just sheer madness all the way.
This is bananas. This is everything we're going to go on. It's just that we're... It's already fairly well inured to it by this stage. It's just like, I knew you were going to go nuts. So just show me how nuts you can go on this little wash over me. Like, yeah, keep it on. Space baby. Yeah.
Sure. Bring him back to Earth. Of course it was Earth all along. Obviously it was, yeah.
Much more satisfying space baby ending than Mass Effect 3 did, for sure.
I like the Mass Effect 3 ending, but I'm one of the few, it seems, on this.
Less giant robots in Mass Effect 3. Well, there were some, but there was not enough.
Not as many. Not as many that could grow bigger and bigger and bigger, and they didn't punch God. So, you know.
They did not.
Then we got Dragon Quest, The Adventure of Dai, episode 37. All in an instant. What a great episode for Father's Day weekend, as we meet a truly shitty anime dad.
Because he's a good fighter figure in Master. It's Kung Fu Master. You see him without his sheet on. Oh, wait, no, they're two different people. How could I get them confused?
What could be possibly be more dangerous than an offensive spell? Well, how about a healing spell that is overheal?
It's like when you use like the Phoenix down on the zombies and it kills them instantly. It's like, I see.
I love that idea. I gotta steal that for fucking campaigns. That's actually what like poison magic is. It's just
canned food.
it's kind of the idea of you're causing the systems to overwork, which is what like healing does. That's why you can't heal someone who's dead, because it's like, oh, because you're not working with the body's in given systems. Whereas like, I'm gonna make your systems heal so much that they start fucking cracking and breaking down.
Right. Well, in my analogy, that doesn't remember how it works, is that it's Hokuto Shinken, which, you know, if you hit a special point, it can kill you or it can heal you. Depends how you use it.
Yeah, so we get a flashback of Mom wondering how she's going to be an offensive martial artist when she was a... what's her class before?
Battle cleric, or warrior cleric.
Yeah.
And yeah, the master explains, no, healing can be used offensively. And that's what she's been using against our mad scientist Darkling son here. But he's going to take care of that by sealing up her fists. But first of all, we'll rescue Dai out of his stomach. And we'll have a sequence with Chiyu trying to find some healing out of his trousers. which, having now played 90 hours almost of Dragon Quest XI, I'm like, is this a joke about how cumbersome the inventory is in Dragon Quest games? Because
it's somewhere in your pants.
I have definitely run into this situation, because at least in 11, I don't know, I've not played any of the previous ones, but I'm just assuming that it's a constant in that you have like an item bag, but you also have the items carried by the characters. And so when you're in a fight, you can only access the items the character is carrying, not anything in the item bag.
I remember that being so frustrating in games. Everyone has to go to the turn at the shop to get the fucking elixirs and high potions. And then it's just like, I can't get this fucking high potion. You're doing the starting healing item. Yes. It's like, actually, it brings out then, this acorn can cure give as much stamina as a sparrow's teardrop. Okay.
When is that going to be useful? That's all I need.
Just get me up there to that sword.
Sorry, I got to have you drag me up there, but I literally am going to have to use all my stamina to do one attack and end it in one hit.
Yes.
Because get me to the cool sword and I'll do the Avan Strash.
But before that, the ghost guy suggests to Pop that, hey, why don't you just fire a frizz? He's like, oh yeah, I got enough energy for a frizz. Fire it at Mom. He's like, And he uses that to blast off the slime that was preventing her from using her healing spells.
Mm, the old Jonathan Joestar, set your fists on fire, eh? Okay, I see.
That old gambit, yes.
Yeah, it does the Avan Strash, and they're like, has it got him? Has it got him? And Barb says, it's got him! And then he disintegrates back to his original form, and then lies on the ground dying, and... he seems to partially regret things, but he's still going to send his dad all the data he's accomplished.
It's like, you've pointed out to me that this is an incredibly abusive parent that I have, but, you know, it's all I got.
Yeah.
He's a dark wizard. I don't know. I suppose, you know, just, it's what you're raised, and you don't know any different, but anyone looking up, you guys are fucking dark, you're missing a bit of the fucking Dark Legion, the Dark Army.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not going to be a lot of time for him to bring it to football practice or whatever.
Also, they were standing way too close to him. I'd be afraid of breathing into ash that he's turning into. Yes. But it's like, and they're like, all he wanted was his father's praise, which he does technically get when the father received the data packet from his headband.
Yes. Also, the sword disintegrates because it was a fake, because the real sword is with Hadler.
Yeah. It was in a tank getting perfected, which will improve with this new data packet, I guess.
Yeah. So, yeah, it looks like, I guess that should be the next fight, I would guess.
It's Mabazu, so...
And his chess people.
Yeah. Oh, I always get so fucking hyped when I see those chess guys in the intro. Like, oh yeah, I can't wait for those guys to turn up. It's going to be cool.
Either that or they'll be killed immediately, because the show just fucking flies through plots, yeah.
Maybe, but, you know, it's pretty cool.
They do look cool.
Good fucking kicks and punches in this one, for sure. Mammoth just knocking that motherfucker over that stadium. It's pretty sweet.
I was fine with, like, the scale just being completely out of whack, just because it looks so fucking cool. Like, that she was, like, tiny. The monster was fucking huge at several stages, just because it looked cool, and it's fine.
It is the first episode, though, where it's definitely being as horny as all the horny stuff they've cut out of it so far.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of crotch and butt shots.
Her ass right in front of the camera. Yeah.
I think I was saying to Brian one of the prior days, it's like they put tights on Mom to make it less like exposed leg kind of thing, but now you have tight fetishists coming in and animating that for themselves. So you just replace one kind of horniness with a different, but all right, fair enough.
I just want to check in the comics, did you always wear tights? I'm going to presume maybe not.
No, I think it was bare legs in the comic. That's that was the addition of, like, cover up with nylon tights.
Still show her pants. Yeah. Then we got My Hero Academia, episode 101. Have a Merry Christmas.
Hey.
I can't. Was all this in the comic? I couldn't remember a lot of this, but I assume by some of the beats that it must have been.
I definitely remembered some of the beats. I was like, did this take place during Christmas in the comics? I was trying to remember. I could not.
The first half is them getting media training from Mount Lady. And I do...
Because their interview was so bad with the thing they did at the end of the last episode, which is very funny. That is a good bit.
I did like the recurring gag of Benita being absolutely terrified of her. And she's the one character he's disgusted with.
Good stuff. And it is like, if you're going to be in the public eye, you're going to need a bit of media training. They're like, but she's just new to this. It's like, yeah, but she's taken to like a duck to water, basically. She's quite right. And it's just like, okay, here's how you need work. And all of them are pretty good at bigging up themselves, except for Bakugo, who's too good at bigging up himself in one specific regard of seeing everyone as beneath him. And Midoriya is the opposite in that he's a. He just freezes up.
He's so proud, though, when he gets the tiny little whips out of his body.
I did it! And everyone's like, did what? Yeah.
Then we get a faculty meeting where principal is sitting in Eraser's scarf because that's where it's warm.
I'm like, don't you have your own chair? So it's like, yeah, but it's nice up here. Like a cat.
So cute, though. Also, he's a boss, we can't say no to him.
And we also get a bit around here where it's like, there's definitely no spy within in the school body. Forget that plot. But ignore what we said before.
Yeah, maybe not. I think he's forgotten about it, too.
And then we get the Christmas bit where everyone's wearing Santa costumes apart from Bakugo, and they're trying to put Bakugo in a Santa costume. We get a little flashback with him and Best Genist. And then Eri shows up. That was a nice bit, yeah. And she's
adorable. I liked looking at everyone's Santa hats and seeing the themed tassel that they had. And I liked the... It wasn't like a secret Santa. They all like randomly picked out a gift. And you could tell, oh, that's from thing. And I was like, yeah. It's fun bits, but it's all just... It's having a laugh. Like.
Yes. And then we get Eri confusing Christmas with every other holiday.
Because she's never experienced any of them. Because horrifying life for that child. Let's let her have a party.
And then after the credits, they've Shoto, Bakugo, and Deku. Oh, getting hiccups for some reason. Have all been invited to work study with Endeavor. Because that's why they're looking back on Best Genius. Because they were talking about their work studies they'd got to do.
Yeah, because that was the meeting with the teachers, the faculty meeting, where it's like they're going to be going on work studies and they're discussing. It's like, yeah, they're clearly trying to cover it up because there's an abundance of heroes, but they're acting like they need heroes on the job over the holidays, like even trainee guys with their trainee licenses. And Midori's like, okay, I can't work for the old lad because he's doing secret spy work. I can't work for this guy because they're restructuring the organization due to fucking president being murdered. It's like, and Bakugo was like, I can't work for Best Genius because he's missing in action. Even though he fondly remembers getting his hair combed.
And his terrible, terrible superhero names.
But he is like, all great.
When I see you next, I want you to tell me your superhero name.
Well, as we know, they are quite clever because they're very elaborate puns on explosions, actually, in the original language. But, you know,
he gets a good name eventually, so, yeah.
Yeah. I can't remember if this next bit's where we start to get the Deku and Bakugo being awfully awkward around the family drama.
God, I fucking hope so, because that was pretty good.
It is pretty good in the comics. I'm sure it would be just as good with people acting it out. Then we've got Welcome to Demon School, Iruma-kun, episode 10, Balaam's Lesson, in which we meet the second super soft boy of the show.
Doesn't look good, but he is. Yeah.
He is.
Of course.
Yeah, his main problem, though, the reason people flee his classes is because he's a little touchy-feely. He keeps on wanting to stroke people's hair.
Yes. Yeah. He just likes petting people.
A very tactile person. Tactile individual.
That's how he learns.
Loves bunnies. He loves petting them and stroking them and calling them George.
Yes. And he's explaining like how imaginary creatures must survive. Well, in hell, cats in hell, they've got wings, so they hunt birds. But imaginary cats, they don't have wings. They must hunt creatures on the land.
They must hunt creatures on the land or at sea. Well, yes. We're still working on that. Yes. We're trying to figure that bit out.
The ground.
Like and
the
it's insects. Like demons evolve wings so we could like fly around and be really powerful and shit. Whereas humans don't have wings. So obviously their survival things are completely different. And he's just sitting there like, please don't find out I'm human. Please don't find out I'm human.
And then he starts petting Iruma and it's like, oh, and then just picks him up and dashes to the faculty lounge again. It's an emergency. This boy's wings have disappeared.
And they're all like, whoa, that's fucking true. Take his fucking shirt off, Midoriya's going like, Midoriya, freaking it's the same
it's a haircut.
I think, the big hair, yeah. Iruma's kind of like, oh shit, but his ring has finally helped out for once, and yes. It's like, oh, he's just got a really small wing stem.
He's
like,
with the save, he's just sort of like, whoa.
Yeah, he's hiding behind his hand kind of thing.
Well, yes, because he's panicky, doesn't want to be discovered either, so.
Iruma can't progress if he's discovered to be a human, so yeah. But they're all just like, oh, he just has a really small wing stem. It's that would be embarrassing. Sorry, kid, we've taken your shirt off in the faculty room. That's actually really mean of us. And as he's walking him back to the class, he's kind of like, hey, I just got to say, because I found out now, and he kind of tears off his mask. And he's like, oh, God, he's going to eat me right here in the corridor. It's like, no, my face is all fucked up because I embarrassed you there. Like, my face is fucked up. That's why we're
I've seen yours, I'll show you mine.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's
like, yeah, because they were discussing in the class at the start about what would you do if you saw a human? And they're like, well, we'd eat him. And Aruba's panicking over that. Because it's like, oh, yeah. Did they eat him
Balaam was just like, well, I have so many fucking questions before I'd eat him. Yeah.
And so he makes him a nice cup of tea. And he's just being so nice that Iruma is like, oh, well, I feel terrible that I'm lying to him. So I'm just going to have to tell him I'm a human. And I like his thing of just like stepping back, sitting down, and then immediately falling off his chair.
And the several things of him like running across the room is like, don't fucking touch me. You might have like human disease. I don't fucking know.
You're an endangered species. It's like meeting a fucking unicorn. Hold on.
Yeah, because that is my favorite like bit of this character is that the idea him treating like, oh, humans are an endangered species. Got to protect them. He's like,
well, I mean, like they can't even fly and they don't have magic powers. They're so vulnerable.
They're so pathetic. They're so fragile. So very precious. Must protect.
But he's like such a different attitude to with the chairman and Opera, who also know. That he's got.
And then, a different way of wanting to protect him.
And then he like explains like his childhood. He's got these picture books that he makes because he always loved picture books, and this is what helps Iruma learn. And so he shows up to help tutor them, and it turns out he
initially like starts creeping on them, and everyone's like, "What is that creepy guy in the corner?" And he's best mates with their teacher some fucking how, which is just so good.
Well, you see it in the flashback when he's sitting and reading, being bullied. There's like a younger colleague, sat next to him, also reading. A proper book, not a picture book.
We just sit down and read quietly together. He reads picture books, but I mean, like, I'm not one to fucking judge.
Because it's like another hint that Keller goes, he's a nice guy. He's just got a brusque exterior.
He's got a bad attitude.
Yes.
dear.
Yeah, and so he just keeps on writing these picture books for Iruma so he can pass the exam.
Yeah, he's scored over 50% on a test, the passing barely grade, and they're doing so well with studying that the rest of the school went, oh, they're actually doing better. We should also buckle down and study instead of dossing off.
But yeah, it's also like it's talking about like how there's different ways of learning. Like some ways of learning might not be right for certain kids.
Yes,
that seems to be the point it's making. Also, we learn which ones are the morons. Like, which one's the intelligent?
To get the misfit class, they're like so skilled and like in thievery, in like, you know, social engineering, and so many other little attributes and things. They're a speciality. It's like that doesn't factor into their grade stuff. So just getting written off as being, you're a misfit, you're a dumbass, you gotta go in this class. But I'm such a sweetie though. It's just this big like mother hen. It's just always running after. It's just like. Are you eating properly? He just, you know, big intimidating dude, but he's just like, oh, he's so worried about you.
Yeah, it does like cover a few more things as well, which I don't know whether they mentioned. They like, oh, a bloodline power is rare, so I guess not all the class will have them.
Yeah, and it's like they go the three magics. One is like you learn the magic spell. Two is like a non-semantic component where that's really hard, but some people can do it with a lot of training. And three is your bloodline ability, which you can't learn. It's just like passed down in the family, that kind of way.
But you can make it stronger through training.
Training, yeah.
Which is a storybook he's written, which is basically just the three main leads as little kids in the storybook. And he's like, wow, I understand it now.
Learning magic.
Yeah.
Are we just assuming Sabnock is one of the intelligent members of the class?
Yep. You have to be smart to be the Demon King.
Yeah.
Isn't he in like the library club, library battler?
Yes, he is. Yeah,
He's a nerd about the Demon King. So yeah, he knows a lot of stuff about the...
Not just important. You want to be the Dark Ruler.
So it ends with them about to take the exam, and if they pass the exam, they will be taken to an amusement park.
Yes. Mm.
And Ruma has never had a holiday, so this would be unique to him.
It's my summer holidays filling potholes or some other nonsense or on a fishing boat. That Adam is great.
What's the Tsukima is the progression where he has to very slowly like kind of make himself immune to being near Ruma.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's like he's a good physical presence of like this, really imposing guy who does lots of like being afraid of this little kid, but also deeply caring about the little kid at the same time.
Just because the mask and like this, the I guess just the look of him, it is difficult to discern when he's getting really like angry or he's getting really like frightened or concerned. It's just that the eyes just go like they're all bloodshot, going.
Yeah, it turned out Lord Humongous was a sweetheart. Yeah.
Keep it going.
I'd say I think it helps introducing him now. Once you've got, you can contrast him against Amory and Amory's dad and the chairman and opera.
The other teachers in the as well.
Yeah, so you got the contrast with the other teachers. You got contrast with the people who know or suspect that he's human. It all plays out quite nicely. And then you can tell me all about Thunderbolt Fantasy Sword Seekers 3, Episode 12, The Patriot Once Again.
Yes, The Patriot Once Again, and the con is officially on.
I was happy with this. This was like, because I think I literally said, it's like, oh, he's been surprisingly helpful this episode. And I was like, well done, Shaw. You got me. You tricked me, you beguiling wind.
You get the title out of the way. It's like,
the title bit is good.
Wan Junpo, rather. It's just like, I'm putting the mask down because that's why I joined up with this evil society for the right reasons. I'm doing the wrong thing for the right reasons.
He's given like a speech to two opposing armies that he is the general of both. in order to get them on the right side to do the right thing.
And I have deceived you fellas in the Royal Army. I deceived you guys, my loyal soldiers in the Divine Swarm.
So if either of you want to walk out on me on this, I totally fucking understand. But I joined the Divine Swarm because I really believed that we were going to help my homeland. But the boss of the fucking Divine Swarm said, do not fucking kill the demon that's coming back to ruin our fucking homeland. Which I think is bullshit. And I joined the army because I wanted to protect the people and stuff like that. And it's just like he does a really compelling thing. And I liked two of the masked fucking nobodies like going like, oh, we can't fucking trust him. And like one guy goes like, I joined the Divine Swarm because the army killed my son. And it's like, but I fucking stand by the general. And it's just like, oh,
turn my life around. Give me a job. Give me a reason to live again.
And like his speech was like, I just spent every day wondering when I could kill you in your sleep, but I will work together with you to fight this demon. And I was like, these guys are all going to get like slaughtered immediately. It's like, no, but what he needs is actual like a bunch of dudes. Because like, all right, I want you to all walk around the. I was going to say the woods. The what's the name of it? The
Void Junction.
The Void Junction, and break every fucking mirror you see.
Smash it in the dust.
Don't just break it up about. Completely. Don't have it not be a reflective surface. So I need a bunch of dudes to do this. And I was like, oh yeah, these guys are actually going to be useful rather than just cannon fodder.
Meanwhile, back in time, they've gotten to the moment of that Xinghai.
Zhao Julin.
Right at the moment of her death, it's like, okay, lads, hang on a minute here. We're just going to go over that cliff and we're going to catch her body before it hits the ground. And Lo is like confused by this.
Who are these people?
Who's this woman over there? What? What are we doing here for? It's just
okay,
like,
we're too soon. We can't interfere with the timeline yet. Okay, let's hop to the bottom of the cliff. And as she's falling off the cliff, okay, grab her. Brilliant. I was like, what are we doing here, sword? My love, what are we going to do? And your one's doing a crazy spell. Apparently part of her necromancy is to bend backwards like Boa Hancock and reveal her cleavage. She does it twice in this episode.
Well, they got the sexy puppet action. No, the fans wanted more. We had to get it.
Yeah, if you got a sexy puppet, use the sexy puppet. Actually, speaking of, your one, when she, the sword master, when she shows up in this episode and she does the gulp thing with the rubber plastic that they're using, that was just gross to me. I didn't need to see that. With her nervous gulp as a puppet was ugh, gross.
To put the soul like back into the body, it was just like, hey, it's me, it's Arjuna. And I'm saying, who are you? I was the sword, I was the ambassador's death. If I want to talk to you, it's like, I don't get it. I'm not into it, man. Like,
that's bullshit.
A sword is obviously sexy. I don't get what's going on with this.
Obviously, like, I need a weapon for murder that has murderous intent. A person with murderous intent isn't hot at all. What the fuck are you talking about? Please get back in the sword. And she swats him away. It's like, all right, let's go back to the future and just leave him here so he can't interfere with us. That's probably for the best.
That time-traveling sorcerer who he left for dead a few episodes back is going to come by and get him out of there nonetheless, I think.
Yeah, probably.
So he's not stuck in time. He's going to come back. Or they could always save that for potentially another series if they want to do so. I don't know.
He's not like killed or anything. He's still a player potentially.
In the present day, which you know, they all return to then, but in the present day, it's all coming down like a house of cards, like a Jenga tower, because Jan Fei turns up, it's like, husband, where are you? I've come to get revenge for you, or avenge you, and then here comes Lin Zuiya, apparently everyone's saying, oh, where's my sword, because he's escaped from the dungeon after the
he was let out by the general, basically out of pity. It's like, oh, his mind has been broken, the poor man.
He's stumbling around anyway. It's like, oh, where's my girlfriend? Where's my sword girlfriend? It's just like, that's fine. Stand up straight, back arch, tighten your grip. That shitty sword stance, I know it anywhere. That's my husband right there. And then it was like, whoa, what's going on? I'm back to life. Oh my gosh, I'm so confused. What's going on? And then
I figured it out as soon as flashback. When he realized there was people there and he went to grab the sword and they did the thing where he went for the motion to grab lower down on the staff, I mean sword. And I was like, oh, it's fucking that guy. I put it together on that. So it was really good physical puppet acting.
Yeah.
just great direction there. So he was disguised with a magic bag as the enigmatic Gale. And while your one's doing her sexy necromancy where she reveals her cleavage, she's like, wait a minute, that's not the fucking one-eyed sword.
That's not Wang Kanyun. This is Yi Pi Miao, that other dude.
Dressed as him wearing a different magic bag over his head.
But it's like, wait, what happened? When the switch go down? And it's just like, yeah, it's when Shang Buhan and Ling Ya got fucking sent snow. Ash for his backwards
past,
time,
yeah.
And then everyone said, now Wang Kang knew we need to be able to sneak around here and you know and keep a hidden. I was like, I can't sneak around, I'm not a big stealth guy at all. Ah, if you were disguised as me, It would not
be. You put
be,
this magic bag on your head that makes you look like me.
It would not then, be out of place if you act suspicious, because they all be thinking I'm acting suspicious. So, you're a perfect patsy for me. Everyone said, okay, so you put that on him. And...
That's really fun, because like all of his out of characterness is just absolutely just a guy being very bad at acting like him up to this point.
Yeah.
That's so good.
It doesn't matter, because you already think that he's going to fuck them over. So, this is. Let's leave him off and we'll just find a use for him later. But it's like, but it wasn't me to begin with.
Yeah. So he was disguised as the Mantis.
EPM now. So that was him talking to the leader of the Divine Swarm over a magic video call back there.
And it's also been him egging on the general the whole time. He's playing everyone. I was just like, yeah, that's fucking perfect.
And he's trying to figure out the situation because, like, you know, it's just like, oh, like, Wang Jinpo could be my boy on the side here, but if he's going to listen to the leader of the order, then I have to put that into account. But he's made it clear that, he only wants to get the sword, he doesn't care about any demon regression. I'd rather that not happen, because while I am a rogue and a blackguard, I don't want the world to be destroyed, because that would be some very fun. So, now that I know what he's up to, I'm going to try and undermine his plan. Fuck all this shit up for him right now.
So it wasn't just like guys had switched roles. It was like three different guys had switched roles. And the reason Pimao had disguised is like, have you prepared the magical disguise where I can disguise myself as Shang Buhan's friend who he once gave the Sorcerer's Sword Index to hold onto? And he's like, yes, I have prepared it. Don't worry. This disguise is very good. It will even last when you die. It'll stay on. Yep. And he's just laughing away at himself, basically like, oh my god, this is going to be really funny when the other guy dressed as me stabs you dressed as that guy. It's going to be really funny. I know the problem with this show is it kind of sets up this fucking amazing, like you say, house of fucking cards or Jenga fucking tower, and it goes like, isn't that clever for several episodes, and it's like, yeah, it's clever, but go on, show. But then when it does it, it's very good when it pulls it apart.
Like he's just leaning into it. He's just sitting there. He's just smoking his pipe. Like, you know, he's going to do something. You don't know what's going to be yet, but you know it's going to be good.
It was good. I was delighted by that. That was good.
And he was fucking gulping that thing now as well for fun. Jeez, I don't know. I had a smoke in minutes. Oh, God. That's the stuff. That's the good stuff. Oh, yeah.
Well, the other guy he was disguised as wasn't a smoker, so it would reveal his plan. Mm.
Of course. It's like bubble pipe. Anyways, even though like she's been resurrected, we gotta go get Shang Buhan out of that coffin. He's gonna kick some ass. We're gonna get the boys back together. We're gonna do the old thing back to back. We're gonna do it. But maybe like Guan Junpo and there as well, because he's gonna be like, no, yes, I'm a hero now again. I'll fight with you. And
yeah.
We got Xing Hai. We got Zhang Julin. Is there a third one to God? Take it on account. Probably the Stankles to take on those two. Malfur was there as well, because he's just to come back and basically wrecked and like the magic mirrors are kind of outside, but he's still like chatting to him, like, hey, I'm over here. Instead of getting power going to the place, so your plan will still be going ahead, so go wreck some shit. I'll watch him here.
He also sent them a bunch of like demon goons.
Oh yeah, he did.
They're outnumbered, and they're like, uncharacteristically kind of you. Do you have a stake in this? And he's like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
We just needed some goons to get diced up in the last episode. Thanks for providing those for us. It's really nice of you.
When the show is on, man, it's fucking on. It's great.
Righty ho, that is your lot for this week. We will be back next week on Wednesday for slightly less of the same.
Mm.
We'll have two less shows to watch.
Yeah, but we got more coming down the road, so it's not so bad.
Yeah, but
something going on for one more extra than I thought they might. So that's
nice
thing to have, because it means we're giving them a little more bit more time to. Get it over the line, that's good. Then you just kind of see, here's other things I added to my queue that was like I had to cast aside because it's not physically possible for one person to go through all this week.
Yeah, I think I'm definitely maybe planning on just sticking to six shows for the next season.
You might only get six. It's a little,
that's true. That might be the issue.
There's good stuff coming, but it is a little thinner. Kind of hopefully, really, right?
Yeah.
It is a lot.
Unfortunately,
yeah.
October is going to be a deluge.
The backlog.
Again.
Yeah.
Rightio, we'll be back then. Goodbye for now.
See you later, folks. Bye-bye.